I hope that it meets your expectations and honors the last episode, because this is the one that gets downloaded. It's the first download for forever. So,
damn, didn't think about that.
Let's roll it back. I think it might be time to get some questions in there about you.
But it's supposed to be about the guest.
I mean,
not about me.
You've had 299 of them. I feel like you've maybe earned it.
But I don't like it.
I feel like
no. You're right. I don't like being in a hot seat, but I guess we have to.
I feel like after 299 conversations, you've probably learned a thing or two. That's a lot of information to distill.
That's a rumor. I didn't learn anything. It was just fun.
Just fun. I know. I'm very impressed. I made it to about 123, I think, was the magic number on my show. But I only led a little over 100 of those. So I'm really impressed by your stamina to hit a full 300. That's pretty wild.
Well, thank you, first of all. and it's been a roller coaster, yeah. I must say. It's been so much fun. It's been meeting absolutely fantastic people. It's been learning stuff I never suspected existed. But it's been long nights. It's been worrying where the next guest is going to come from. It's been pulling out the midnight oil, trying to finish recording and then editing on Monday evening for a publication on Tuesday morning. Yeah, it's been a roller coaster.
It's kind of a ridiculous amount of work, right? It's all of the stuff that no one would possibly imagine, as it just kind of pops into a feed.
Yes, indeed. At the very beginning. I mean, recently, for the past 18 months or 2 years, process has been quite well honed. It wasn't so much work anymore. And by wasn't so much work, I would say there's something like an hour and a half recording for an episode, and there would be an hour and a half work before and an hour and a half work after that.
I love that. Yeah, so you get to do a lot of the good part.
Yeah, but at the beginning, it was something 2-3 hours before and 10 to 15 after. And that was insane. That was really insane. I'm kind of anal on the quality of what I produced. And so I really, really, really went over every sentence and shortened pauses and really tried to make it absolutely perfect. And at some point, I had to realize that the return on investment of that part was not as high as I had hoped. And so I throttled down a little bit the effort. But still, it was,
really interesting. Now, I actually want to talk about the production part of this, but I think before that, I'd like to know what got you even into the idea of podcasting? Because I think you said you started in 2016-ish, right? And I think it was way less. Yep. This was before everybody had a podcast. This was still kind of a, newish underground phenomenon. What was that light bulb moment for you where you're like, it's podcast time?
So first of all, I've been a podcast junkie for over 20 years.
Have they been around that long?
Almost.
Oh,
yeah.
My
gosh. I remember recording radio shows, taking them with me, with the first iPod. And, when the iPod Nano came out, the first version of the iPod Nano, 2005, was it? I think that's where I started seeing the first, digital shows coming up. I'm not sure if it was called podcast yet, but it kind of started with the iPod.
Yeah, so, but it wasn't the name music. Must have started it was there. Like a conversation or
it wasn't
someone
music.
Talking.
It was people talking. Exactly. And then came the idea of this RSS feed and the episodes showing up in your inbox. Back then in iTunes, you had to plug your iPod and synchronize the damn thing. It was a nightmare.
Cables?
But between... Yeah, exactly. And then for the next 10 years, I've had earplugs everywhere and I've been listening to something everywhere. And so really podcasts were front and center in what I did. I commuted a lot with my bike. And so I had between 45 minutes to an hour or something of biking every morning and every evening. Was something in my ears, and it was really part of my life. And so obviously at some point I started asking myself, could I be on the other side, on the other side of that? But Dev Journey didn't start as a podcast. Yeah. I'm not sure I've told this story on the show yet, actually.
It's high time.
I was working for a company. Yeah. No, I've told the rest of the story quite often, but this piece, I think haven't. I was in a company that was really close to editors, to book editors. And a German book editor came to me and because they knew my boss and asked me if I could do some kind of career book for new software developers. And they wanted some clean code in there. They wanted some soft skills in there and everything. And we discussed quite a bit about what they wanted. And in the end, we didn't align at all on what it should be. But that sparked something saying, hey, somebody wanted me to write something cool, about that. There's what? That is weird. And so I started scratching the surface. And I was in this part, I am not sure I told it. And so I really started scratching the surface saying, hey, is there some kind of book that I had in my mind at that time, which was not what the editor had in mind, that I could be writing? And right around that time, I was working as a consultant for a German bank. They did some crazy bullshit.
Basically,
they had a project. Yes, thanks to they had a project. I won't tell the full story, but they had a project that was already two years late that had been budgeted for about 2 to 3 million. When we came in, it was already 5 to 6. And they told us, well, just finish it. And I worked there for 2 years and it took 3 more to finish it.
Do you know what the total
was?
With
a budget of 26. Yeah, there is a whole political story behind it, and but we won't get into there. But one of the things I did for that company was some training, XP training, coaching, and then at some point take a role of a coach, Scrum Master, coach, kind of project lead, delving into this. And one of the things we had to do was really hire a whole lot of people because the project was late. So obviously you add more people to it. Might ring a bell if you've read the Mythical Manual.
Yes.
As a very bad thing to do. So we did it, obviously. And I was very puzzled by all the profiles that was attracting attention inside the bank. They were looking at profiles that didn't attract me, didn't sound interesting. Profiles that were more of the same, more profiles which had led to this fiasco. And that plus that book story sparked something saying, hey, I don't agree with that. And that's where first an idea of a book started. I started sketching essays. I structured it as something like 20 to 40 essays that were building on top of each other, which you could just read one and then let it go for a while and then come back, read one again and again and again. I did as well. I did some testing and people were telling me, well, it was fun. The first one was fun and the second one was fun. And then I forgot about it and never came back to it.
That's the real dev journey right there.
Exactly. Exactly. And so slowly but surely, this idea of doing a book just didn't stick. And I did some talks. That's where I started talking about unicorns quite a bit. That stuck with me for a while. I received some unicorn goodies from my colleagues after that, quite a long time. I have some shoes in unicorn's form somewhere year round. And but at some point, in order to write all this, I had started asking questions a lot around and really calling people and asking them questions about hiring, about their career, etc. And this started to germinate and say, hey, that might be really interesting. And there we get stories that I've never heard somewhere else. And that's basically when 1 + 1 + 1 made 3 and the idea of a podcast started. That's the long answer.
I love it. Now, it's really interesting because I think that it sounds like such a really great kind of like cohesive thing at the beginning, right? Like, I want to learn these things. I should talk with people who know these things and I can learn along the way. But then it kind of takes on a life of its own. You know, a podcast, like you mentioned, you're spending many hours now of your free time to like take this thing that was supposed to be this very cohesive, simple thing. And now it's like, it quickly has a life of its own. What got you to actually like commit to it? That's a big piece of it. You're like, oh, okay, I'm going to start a podcast, right? And, you know, and then you record one thing and then it just languishes and you're like, ah, well, I guess that was fine. And then you move on with your life, but you didn't. You've gone through to 299 of these. So how did you break through from like, well, that was a fun idea, never gonna do that, to actually like breaking through and producing?
Yeah. I won't have a decisive answer, but I remember a couple things. So the first 24, no, a bit more than that, the first 30 episodes or so were people I had met in person. Even though we recorded over the air, I knew them. So the first 20, some of them I would call good friends. Some of them I would call really good contacts, but really people I knew. And the first episode was on March 2nd, 2016. And there's some jumps around. For instance, there's almost a year jump between June 2016 and January, or six months between June 2016 and January 2017, where there's between episode 15, 16 and 17 and 18, with a 17 here that I removed afterwards, actually. So if you look carefully at the list of the episodes, you won't count 300, but the numbering, I kept it and I removed some episodes.
Okay.
Sometimes.
Sure. That makes sense.
Because I tried stuff and sometimes it didn't work. And so it's 300 episodes recorded. I would say 289 published, maybe something like this. But anyhow, and I remember 2018, I was at a conference here in the tech conference, and somebody asked me and said, hey, I've seen you haven't published for a while. And that was a mind-blowing moment, seeing, what? Somebody's listening?
Yeah.
And I remember this sparking something and saying, okay, shit, I have to try. That's where I started recording with people I knew less, not yet people I hadn't met, but people I knew less, and then trying to reach out to people I didn't know and seeing, hey, it works. People respond to that. And so this fear of not having anyone to record with kind of went away, and I said, okay, now I can actually do my own rhythm. And so I started until 2019, beginning of 2019. Couldn't say exactly when. I would have to look at the numbers. Well, actually, pretty far in 2019. Until summer 2019, every 2 weeks. Wow. And there was an episode every 2 weeks. And that was okay. That was a rhythm that was okay. And then at some point, for whatever silly reason, I said, let's go weekly.
It was the worst decision that you ever made in your life.
In a way, it was, and it wasn't. I mean, in terms of sleepless nights, it was. My son was still young, my daughter was still young, and the third one wasn't born yet, and so it still had some sleep left. But no, I don't remember exactly how that came to be, but I think it was something like, I'm not seeing enough people. I want more of that.
Yeah.
At some point, I think I did I did show number 100 was really about myself, mm-hmm. and show number 200 was more about the show. And I think Patrick, who interviewed me on that one, really asked why are you doing this? and the honest answer I could give him is because it sparks joy. Yeah. Hearing those people, listening to the stories, it's really fun. And I'm going to say it. Sometimes I brought my kids to bed, and because I record quite often at night, and told my wife, okay, I have a recording tonight. I just don't want it. I just, hey. And then an hour and a half later, I have a big smile on my face. My cheeks are hurting. We've been laughing for 90 minutes, and I just can't sleep anymore. And so I was dreading some of the recordings, and then afterwards I was on a small cloud somewhere.
Yeah.
It was just rainbows and unicorns. So really, listening to those stories has been fantastic.
Yeah, it's almost like a show that's put on just for you, right? Like it's there's something so personal about having a conversation with another person, and it's just the two of you, and like that only exists in podcasting, I think. And it's wild that people say yes. Like you alluded to this earlier, right? Like it's so weird that you're like, you just put up a website, you start sending audio files on an RSS feed, and then now people are like, oh yeah, I'll have an hour and a half conversation with you.
Yeah, it's insane. An hour and a half is so much, mm-hmm. and that people say yes. I wouldn't say 90% of the time, but almost. It's absolutely insane. I can reach out to anyone, not anyone. I've had some people say no. I've had some people not answer, but a large majority says yeah, hell yeah, right away. And this is mind blowing. You don't know me for shit. The only credentials I have is this list here of 200 plus people. But I guess it's people.
Yeah. Itself. I'm curious, what role do you feel like intentionality and like just the changing world has to play in people's eagerness to say yes? Because I think the world has changed pretty dramatically. And I'll kind of like, you know, stage this a little bit. Like the world has changed very dramatically. And we really don't have a lot of moments like we used to where we're just sitting around talking about stuff. Like, do you feel like that has like primed people to want to dive into these conversations and like give you that hour and a half to share part of their story?
We'll be right back.
Did you know that the first 26 episodes of Dev's Journey were recorded in person? Recording online with good quality was so hard that I tried to avoid it altogether, and then I discovered Zencastr. With Zencastr, my Dev Journey guests only need a web browser, and we can start recording studio quality sound in minutes. It records each participant locally and backs up the files in the cloud while we are talking. It provides such a sense of zen for me, knowing that the guests can just concentrate on telling their journey and nothing else. Publishing a show used to require the use of countless tools to record, edit, post-process, level, tag, host, etc. Those days are over. The folks at Zencastr have been adding one feature after the other, and their product now has all you need to focus on what matters, creating your own show. So go over to zencastr.com/pricing and use my promo code DevJourney, and you'll get 30% off your first month, any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. So now is the time for you to share your story.
That's a good one. I have no idea.
It might be. When was the last time somebody looked at you in the eyes and said, hey, I'm going to listen to you for an hour and not try to sound smart, not try to trick you, not try to speak about me, but it's going to be about you for an hour. Doesn't happen so much.
No, apart from a podcast, I don't think that's ever happened to me.
Oh, that's right. You were on the India hot seat at some point. Show number 214, people.
Hey, nice. Nice callback.
Yeah, you called yourself a mule back then.
No, I have used that a lot since. I have used that a lot.
No, but that's right. Really being listened to and
being able to have an honest conversation without dreading something else to interject or to pop up and really have time for that. That's really,
I remember from episode 214, as you very aptly called out, you did a wonderful job of preparing for the show, but then also feeling it out and just letting it go like where it went. And that is an art. That is that is craft. That is art. And I'm curious, at what point did you feel like you got a hang of that? Or do you feel like you haven't even gotten the hang of it yet?
I still don't. No, I still don't. I mean, there's chemistry. There's definitely chemistry. And I've done a lot in preparing the guests. So you say you alluded to doing work beforehand. The work I do beforehand is not in researching the guests. I research the guests enough to know that something interesting is going to come, to know if I have to poke at something precise at some point. But that's
interesting.
It. Just if somebody has an interesting twist at some point, I want to get in there and just be sure that we're going to talk about this. But that's it. And the rest of the preparation that I do is really preparing the guests to be in the right mindset with the right information when they show up. So it starts weeks before with, you might remember, a very large email that I sent with some questions. It's insane. This email is just pages and pages, but it really tells you everything that's going to happen. And at the end, there are 10 questions that kind of show you where you should be going in your mind, how you can reflect about your story, etc. And those are not the questions that I'm going to ask afterwards. They are to help you prepare. And then when we start recording or start getting online together, we talk for 20 plus minutes to get ready and to really get a good laugh or two or 12, really start getting on the same page. Then I get a feel of how the guest is really like and or what they're like and how I can adapt to their way of speaking, their way of being, if I'm going to have to be very present and really ask a lot of questions or if they are volunteering so much information that I can just mix it up. And this is very important because if this goes well, the next 45 minutes are going to be a bliss.
Yeah.
I can tell you that. But it's not as much me as getting the guests in their right mindset to be ready for that. Obviously, there is some work from my end afterwards, asking some kind of right question at the right time. But why I'm pushing back a little bit is because there have been some fantastic discussions where I didn't do anything, where really the guests were there and yours was a little bit. you were volunteering so much information that I just picked up and rebounded on stuff and you were just going places. And there's been hard conversations. So it's conversations where people were not volunteering stuff and where I had really to go deep into what could I ask next. And after 12 minutes, we were at the end of their story already. And then you have to go back. And that was hard. If I could master dues every time, then I would say, hell yeah, to your question. But I'm sure I can't.
It is interesting. I do very distinctly remember that being a unique aspect of being a guest on your show was all of that preparatory material. And it was, I mean, like I say, it's unique. It was truly unique. I honestly, like most of the times it's like you get an invite and I'm guilty of this too. Like this is how I did it. Like you get an invite and then like maybe a reminder, like, you know, an hour before, like, hey, just a reminder, like this is the studio link we're going to be recording. And there was something very fun about the reflective process of kind of preparing mentally for a show. And I really, it very much stuck with me, that idea of giving someone some sample questions of, this is where you should be mentally. These are the types of questions that I'm going to ask. I'm not going to trick you into anything. But also, these are not the questions I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask you unique questions in the moment. And I'm not going to tell you what they are. I love that. I love that. It's great.
Yeah, I know some people really broke a sweat at this moment, saying, "Well, I won't know the question beforehand." No, you won't. I don't know them either. but I must say, I'm asking them about the topic they know best. They are the only subject matter expert themselves. That makes a big difference. That makes a big difference. I'm not sure. Or maybe we could talk about Angular, React, or whatever, and get in there without you knowing the questions. But you speaking about yourself is a whole different game. Is really a whole different level of knowledge and introspection. Nobody can know if you are not right or not entirely right at that moment, and that de-dramatizes a lot. What we're saying.
That's super well put. Now I'm curious, in your own journey with this podcast, surely there was a point at which it was too much, and as some say, like, the juice wasn't worth the squeeze, right? It was maybe too hard, and despite how much you really enjoyed having the conversations, it was challenging. And I'm curious, what motivated you through that, or what did you learn about yourself that you then changed that made it possible to continue the show?
Oh, that's a very good one. I remember one of those after 100-ish, one of those, I would have to lie, when was it? Just before 200, something like this. And then kind of now. so those three are different. The one after 100-ish was a time where it was really a lot of work. I spoke about 10 hours plus afterwards, and it was really that. It was really way too much work. I was doing everything on my own, not getting any help with scripts I had created, with subpar tools, with everything, and it was just too much. And there came a make or break moment where it was, okay, I managed to twist it up and do way less work, or I'm going to have to call it a day. And that's where I really spoke with a couple of people, really tried out new tools, wrote new scripts, and managed to automate much of the work I was doing. I used no-code tools extensively to automate a lot of email sending, reminders. I managed to find people while doing something else, and I had templates, and it's just insert name there, and already created all the skeletons of what I was sending. Then I just had to research people a bit and add some key elements that I found about them, because I wanted the emails to be really tailored to people, not blasting emails, and that made a difference as well. But then the rest of the work was just with air quotes, 15 minutes of stalking someone. finding interesting moments and putting that in an email. And so the work decreased quite a bit, and that really helped me get over that that first hill. Had I not found this, I guess 100 something would have been the first drop. The second one was summer 2021. COVID was there. It was obviously ups and downs. And that's the moment where I changed jobs and jumped on the job I'm right now, which is a director level position in a startup. So whole different job than what I had before, a whole different rhythm. There I said, okay, if I don't give out the editing, if I don't get help, it's going to be toast. And so, but strangely enough, so yeah, I had to pay for that. And that's okay. That's my white boy privilege that I paid back there. And I'm very serious about this. I know how privileged I was. And so if I can help people, or if I could help people with those stories, that's well paid. But so really, I had to fight with myself in order to accept giving out the editing, accept not doing this on my own anymore, not being not just the sole owner, but really the only person responsible and accountable for the quality of what comes out. And this was hard. This was really hard. I searched for an editor for a very long time and finally found a fantastic guy, and we've had a great relationship, and it worked well, very well, until now. But that was really hard, giving it out and saying, I'm not going to do that on my own. And so there is a world where I would have said, no, not worth it, not giving it out, and that's it. And the final hill is the one I'm on right now. I enjoy those discussions so much, but I'm now in a place where the whole rest is dread. It's just, oh boy, I have to do that again. Loving the discussions. When I'm there, I don't regret any second of those recordings. But the rest has become too much. And I guess it has to do with where I'm with my life right now. The kids are growing up. It's a lot at work. It's a lot at home. It's just becoming too much.
Yeah.
that's the only place you can put it. So is it the time to announce this? And I'm not sure you had some more questions, but I guess it's the logical next step. It's going to be a hill I'm going to stay on for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And this 300 is going to be the last number for a bit. I'm going to move to France next year with the family. Yeah. That's a big adventure that we're going to do together. And I don't see myself continuing this while having this new endeavor with the family. And obviously, the family is going to be way, way, way more in the front for everything. My wife is German. I'm French. We live in Germany, and so now we want to spend 1 year in France, and really so that the kids can experience France with their own eyes and not just through me. And so it's going to be them for 1 year. And I fear that keeping the show alive for that 1 year is not going to work out. That hill is going to be the one I'm going to be stuck for a bit onto. And we'll see if I come back in so summer 2025, it will be, and restart, or if I will have moved and turned the page. I'm sure I won't stay on my butt and not do anything. I'm sure I'll start something new. I just cannot stop. Yeah. But will it be this or will it be something else?
Yeah. I mean, if you have to give it up for a reason, I do feel like focusing on family is like such an important thing. I think it's hard to describe. So my kids right now are 13 and 10. You know, you really do at a point start to feel your own mortality in a sense. And you start to feel not to take it there all the way there, right? But like take it some of the way there, maybe. Like you start to feel like, oh, my kids are growing up fast. And these could be some of the last moments of intentional focus that I give to them. And it makes that equation a lot harder because, there's like a thousand people that you would love to give that, you know, as we talked about, that hour and a half of uninterrupted intention to, you know, there's a time and place where it's like, hey, like I want to give all of those 1.5 hours to my kids and make sure that they have the best of me. And that is a hard decision when you love both.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And definitely my oldest is 11 now. And I start to feel the same when I tell him, hey, do you want to do that? And he looks at me and says, no, I'm going to my friends.
It cuts.
Right in the future. It cuts. Yeah. Ouch. And no, it's really when we manage to connect, then I really want to be there. And because I'm starting to see, I'm not the only interesting stuff in his life anymore. And then for the, not that I was ever, that was a joke, damn it. But you were not laughing.
There is a point. Like, I feel like there, joke aside, like there's, that is very real. Where there's a transformation that takes place where maybe not the only interesting part of their life, but like you're kind of the only consideration, the only external consideration in their life. And when that switches, it kind of is motivating in a way. Like it's definitely attention grabbing for sure to be like, oh, yeah, no, there's definitely a time limit on this, you know, me being the only external consideration in your life is already past. And so I want to like soak up as much of that waning interest as possible.
Yeah, before the teenage comes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It's true.
Because I've heard it's going to be fun.
It's interesting. I'm only just at the beginning of that adventure, and it's interesting. It's fascinating.
Yeah, that's the way to put it.
I'm curious too. Like, I want to say, like, as your responsibilities have changed, right? You mentioned being more at like a director level, being at a director level now. Does that kind of change the equation, I guess, on how much value you get out of on the ground developer types of conversations? But like when you started it. Right. When you started it, you know, eight-ish years ago, you were on a parallel track, right? So it's like you're inviting an expert on, you're kind of walking this road together, and then you walk away with something that you can actually like take away and implement, you know, maybe right then. And so I imagine that as you have gotten to this director level, it's kind of your own developer journey has like kind of diverged from what you're actually doing day to day and how quickly you can implement some of the stuff that people are talking about. Is that, am I like totally off base, or is that like something that is part of the equation?
It might be, but I think you're off base. And let me tell you why. And that's something I'm actually not sure of, or at least where it comes from, or if it's really this or not. Hear me out. When I started the show, I never intended the show to be a technical show. I intended the show to be about the daily lives and the path of software developers. And so we had technical discussions, but it was really as one key moment in a story and not as the backbone of the story. And the backbone of the story has always been people, has always been dealing with people stuff in a technical context, but dealing with people stuff. The persona I had in mind very early for the show was young developers starting their careers, having a couple years of development under their belt, and where they start facing the unknown unknowns of not being a junior anymore, where you let go of that hand that has been guiding you since the beginning and realize, where do I do now? What do I do? Where do I go? Yeah. I have no idea. And I remember this for myself being absolutely exhilarating on the one end and absolutely being absolutely scared shitless at the same time and saying, okay, I am responsible in deciding where I want to go next. And whoa. And so that was the first persona I had in mind. And right around that time when I started the show, I started mentoring from a mental perspective and started rediscovering all this through the eyes of the people I mentored. And so this human element and this, how do I decide? What do I do? Where could I go? Mm-hmm. What's me? That I got on the show was very much feeding into what I did on my daily work, and becoming more and more senior in my daily work hasn't changed that. I still deal with people who have no idea where they're going. They can be junior or they can be already very senior and they still need the help in figuring this out. Spoiler alert, I do as well. and so it's still the same conversations, just in a different context. And so all the things I took from the different shows, the different episodes, really feed in my day-to-day work still nowadays. Yeah. That makes sense.
Oh, for sure. And I love that, the idea of kind of having all these conversations at different levels, but then being able to distill that into working patterns, things that actually, you know, you carry with you throughout your career. I'm curious, looking back, what are some of the ones that seemed most or have been most transformative? Yeah, for, like for you, me. Like what are some of the patterns that you've 299 of these is a lot. And so like, as you kind of, what is it? Map, filter, reduce over those as patterns for living and patterns for living in a, you know, developer focused career. What are some of the things that were and continue to be very transformative lessons from this time?
The first one comes very much from the second career part of the stories. You were one of those. So you were an accountant, if I remember right. and you swept at some point. And what I realized and saw again and again and again and again in all those stories is that it's not a restart when you start developing or changing a career. It's very much of an adding a new skill set, adding something new to an already pretty full plate. And what I've seen quite often is people trying to negate what has been happening before and tell you where, well, you've been coding for 6 months, so you're obviously a junior developer. And trying to see people as junior developers, but senior human beings. And seeing all the things that they bring, connecting all those dots, connecting all the sums of the things that people did before. And when you compare a developer with 6 months under their belt coming out of whatever school or university, it's going to be belittling, but they're babies. And when you compare that to a 40-year-old single mom that has been struggling with life for 20 years, mm-hmm. and kids and taking care of everything, this person is bringing life experience like nobody mm-hmm. else. And they are going to have a transformative effect on people around them. And this is worth gold. Mm-hmm. And this really opened my eyes onto that and helped them stay open in connecting the dots that don't seem to be connectable and try to poke at people and say, hey, you've done this in the past. How does that influence your work mm. nowadays? And people look at me and say, are you nuts? And after an hour conversation, they say, oh, by the way, actually, you're right. And it's influencing this in this way and this way. And this skill, I picked it up mm-hmm. back then. I didn't realize that. And this has been a life lesson, really, to see people in their entirety, even though we are in a very narrow and special field. Yeah. The rest matters.
I love that. It reminds me so much of, have you watched the show Ted Lasso on Apple Plus?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Big fan.
It reminds me of season one. And I mean, I feel like they show this off very early, so it's not really spoilers, but you know, two of the main players on the team, one of them is kind of end of career, kind of sunsetting, you know, a seasoned soccer player. Right. And another one's like right at the beginning of their career, taking off, their hot shot, all that. And it shows so much like animosity between the two of them. Right. And so much of the job of the coach is to try to connect those dots and be like, you have so much that you can learn from each other. And the enemy is not mm-hmm. inside the house. Like the enemy is out there. Like we're supposed to be working together and harnessing all of the things that we have, regardless of how much, like all of this energy is misplaced. And I think that's a really mm-hmm. beautiful idea. The idea of seeing everyone as senior people. Everyone is bringing some type of experience, like whether that is the fresh eyes of like bringing brand new into it, or like seeing how the, you know, sometimes objectivity is like, you know, of like, hey, this is just a job, right? Like this, like I'm only doing this for money because like I have to, you know, for the things that I actually care about that matter in life that I've discovered over the last, you know, 40 years of living yep. in. And both of those are so important. And when we see each other as like collaborators, we can harness that in like really powerful ways to like find that gap and understand like what it is that we're building, what it is that we're doing and learning, you know, we can be inspired on both sides. And that's a tremendous lesson.
It is. And I've been on the receiving end of this recently. We did this 360 review with colleagues, and I went at it with a very imposter syndrome feeling, because they're all brilliant, and they outmatch me in every way, and it's fantastic. And one of them told me, hey, but you're so calm. Mm. You're bringing the pace down, and this we love so much. I said, what? So it was another way to say you're old, but it's really something I hadn't seen about myself, yeah. and there he connected two dots mm-hmm. that I really didn't suspect would be interesting. Yeah. And so when somebody else does this for you and finds out how your past influences you as a person and influence other people mm-hmm. now, this is fascinating. And so really put those goggles on, people, and try to see the world this way. It's going to be transformative.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's a beautiful thing that you're bringing into, you know, directing, is the ability to see the world now from so many different perspectives and stages in life. Right. You know, like, I think that's maybe even the more important piece, right? Is that you've been able to listen to so many people talk about exactly the place that they're in and the lessons that they're learning there. And so you know the value of paying attention, you know the value of listening, and being able to coach other people in that philosophy to slow down the pace, as you mentioned, and be like, hey, you know what? I think that there's something that we could probably learn here. Let's just, you know, put the brakes on a second, listen up, open our ears a little bit, and like see what happens.
Yep. Yep. No, that's very true.
Yeah.
You want another one?
Oh, yeah, please. Yeah. As many as you got. That's what we're here for.
The next one, I kind of knew about it, so it's not an entirely one that really dropped on me, but it was highlighted so many times over that I just cannot ignore it, and it's the importance of relations. No matter how technical we are, and we in our sick scientific brains, we imagine there is a solution for everything, and there is one answer, a technical answer to everything. The most important stuff is still people, and whatever you do, it's still people. Yeah. I remember a funny thing at the end of my studies in the engineering school I attended to the. Major I did at the end of my studies was in system architecture and system integration, whatever. And year after year, they had less and less students. And at some point, the head professor said, "Hey, do you want to do some kind of intervention in the classes below us and just tell them about what we're doing? It's going to be a great marketing effort." I said, "Yeah, sure, let's do that." And the people in the room were just poking back at, "Well, but we don't like tech and everything." And at some point I was fed up and said, "Well, but it's not about tech anyway. It's about people." And I saw the glaring eyes of the head professor saying, "Just shut up." But back then I was sure of it already. Mm-hmm. It's all about people. Yeah. And the what is going to make a project, make a company is people. What is going to break it is people as well. The tech is never going to be the problem. Now I'm going to be the old man in the room. When I look back, I don't see the projects I did. I remember that person and that person and that person. And I remember playing a role in the life of that one. And I remember looking at this one on LinkedIn a couple of years ago and saying, "Oh, holy shit, he has grown so much. And he did this and they did that." And that's what you remember, not the project. And so building relations, being there for people, being interested into what they tell you, this is the alpha and the omega. Mm-hmm. And this has been said so many times in stories, sometimes under the pretense of networking, sometimes in mentoring, sometimes in doors being opened. So there's a little different flavors to speak about it. But it's really, at some point, I was interested in somebody and I really give this person time and something ensued, whether that be something good for me or something good for them or just nice relationship. Sometimes the doors being opened which you didn't suspect, and for myself, doing this show has opened so many doors that I never knew would be openable at some point, and it's been fantastic. And so being selfless and listening to people, asking honest and genuine questions, it's really it's a superpower.
I completely agree. I think that is why people say yes, you know, back to that, like, why do people even say yes to coming on these, you know, these podcasts or these shows? I think that it is a superpower to be able to prioritize someone and like put someone first and to listen. I think that it is rare in the world today to be interested in what someone else has to say and the full scope of their perspective. I think that's, you know, I think a lot of times people, you know, we see more and more people are playing that trick or that short-term game where it's like, "I'm trying to get a soundbite out of you so that I can like dunk on you for the rest of eternity."
Having not guilty of having been done that any time ever.
But yeah, it's like having genuine care for people, you know, it seems like such a funny way that like a podcast would be a way of expressing care for people. I think it really is. And I'm so delighted that you have taken that away from it, right? That you have had experiences with people more than just episodes or, you know, views or clicks or likes or whatever. Like you've had honest to God experiences and connections with people that you then from that point forward get to share in what they've done. And they get likewise get to share in what you've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that I cherish really is when I reach out to former guests and that they right away remember and say, "Oh yeah, that's fun discussion when we talked about this and we talked about that," and saying, "Oh, holy shit, it wasn't just 1 hour recording in your life. It left a trace." Sometimes some guests say, "Wow, never seen this in this perspective before." After the show, we have a discussion about that and they leave the show saying, "I think I grew a little bit." That's again, something, wow, that was so much. And and so rewarding for me as a host. And this was really the connections or the relations I'm talking about, when we managed to not just have an interesting conversation, but grow a bit on both sides of the interview. And that's magic.
I was interviewing with someone, and it was very casual, but I had them as a guest on the podcast before, and they had this moment, like when we got on the call, the interview call. Wait a second, was that podcast the only time that we've ever actually like talked? Because I feel like we have like such a long history of communicating with each other, and I feel like that's the power of that focus, right? It's like, oh wow, like you made a friend in that hour and a half. Like that's a powerful transformation to have happen from like perfect stranger to relationship. It's wild.
It is. And I'm not sure if you're talking about us right now,
but it could feels be, like right? I mean, yeah.
You could be. We actually interacted a bit on Twitter since and before, but we haven't had that much interaction all than this. When I searched for someone who could accompany me on show 300, you were the first one to come and say, hey, we had so much fun. We connected right away. I said, you have got to invite you again. And I'm so glad you said, hell yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm there.
No, you're really, really hitting the nail on the head with it. Having so little time together and still be able to connect so deeply with people is magical. It's really magical. The third one I have for you, it's about making your own path. It's a more thorny one. When I described the beginning of the junior path being this guided place where people take you by the hand, show you the moves, and you basically repeat sets of steps. And if you do that well, the outcome is given. This is how I describe being a junior. And graduating out of this is basically making your own path, is realizing that the steps you were given are not the only way to do it. Maybe in your context are not the right way to do it, that you know stuff or you discover stuff that other people don't know, and that you have to start finding your answers to those questions on your own, and realizing that it's your life, it's your path, you decide. You may be in a job somewhere doing Java, still the rest of the industry is open to you. You can go wherever you want. If you put your mind to it, you can learn JavaScript. Well, JavaScript, easy to go from one to the other.
Same language, right?
yeah, absolutely. It's coffee anyway. So, no, but if you put your mind to it, you can do it. Seeing this in these paths and these new stories again and again and again and again is really something empowering and making you understand that you're not stuck anywhere. You can do it. And this has made really left a trace or a mark on my life, saying, where do I want to go? What would I choose to do next? And at some times I really felt guilty of being in the flow and just going with wherever job is taking me. And, some stories really struck back and pushed me back into the, no, you could be you're choosing to go this way. You are choosing to stay with the flow. It's not the way it is. It's not a universal truth. You're choosing this, and you could be choosing something else. Hearing that was and is still one of the things I cherish about all those stories and that really influences the way I
No, it does. And let me try to reframe it just to make sure that I do understand it, because I think it's a very important thing to attack from a couple angles. I know this is something that I've kind of like gone through quite a bit with my therapist, this idea of kind of owning my decisions and not not seeing them as a product of the circumstances that created them. And I think that is, there's a radical ownership that a lot of us don't take over our lives, right? Like, oh, well, you know, this was the opportunity that I had. And so I used that as a foothold. And then I, you know, kind of like continued to learn and, you know, whatever. And so now I do this thing that I hate. It's so easy to kind of like fall into that trap, and being intentional and owning your decision gives you power over the outcome as well. And, you know, also it makes you responsible for the outcome, you know, if it's unfavorable. available. So, that, you know, I think that's why we avoid accepting it a lot of the times. But it is empowering, you know, to say like, you know what, there were many circumstances that led to this, but also I chose it. And that gives me power to choose the next thing as well. I do love that. I think it is powerful advice that, you know, that I don't see a lot, you know, honestly, in the industry. There's this, my wife gave me this phrase today, kind of talking about a similar thing. I think it was from Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And I guess he kind of described his path through life as a guided drift. Like he had the principles that he really wanted to live by, but didn't really know how to apply them and like what the direction was. You know, it talked about living life as this kind of like guided drift where the principles were kind of like, you know, paving the way, but like in the middle, it was very kind of icy and like kind of moving, you know, a little bit unstructured at times. But kind of in the rear view, you can look back and be like, no, the principles were the thing that kind of like kept me on the track that I ultimately wanted to go to, even though there were moments in between that felt undirected.
I love that. I love that. And also the fact that the drift is neither positive nor mm-hmm. negative. There's no qualifier on it. Or a guided drift could be a good thing at some point, and it could be a bad thing at some other point. Yeah. But put in the light of the principles, then you know it's going in the right direction, and so it's good. And but I guess you have time in your life for drifting because you need it, for drifting because you cannot do anything else, for drifting because you have the energy to drift now and explore. Mm-hmm. And those are the same words again. Talking a lot about words before the show started, and it's playing on words, but really having different meanings that all apply in this context. That's a good one. A guided drift through life.
Love it. You leave it to Fred Rogers. That guy was great. So I'm curious, you know, as you get ready to press the big pause button, possibly indefinitely, we're not saying that it is indefinite or not, you know,
we don't know yet.
It's just like Apple, you know, like there's no stop button in iTunes. It's just a pause button. You're going to come back to the music in some way or form. So as you get ready to press the big proverbial pause button, what do you think you'll miss the most as you create almost a new gap or space in your life?
I know it has been challenging in a good way to hear all those stories I didn't suspect existed. And so I know it has pulled me into corners of my psyche, of the world that I didn't know existed, that I didn't suspect. Mm-hmm. And I fear, it's really a fear that I'm going to fall back on my bubble and miss out on the part of the world I won't be seeing anymore. And this is really something that worries me because I discovered, to put it very, very, very bluntly, I discovered tools, I discovered frameworks, I discovered methods, I discovered books. Mm-hmm. That's the very, very material approach. Mm-hmm. I discovered philosophies.
Yeah.
I've discovered quotes that I pondered for weeks. I've discovered people that I followed up afterward and really connected with afterward, etc. And so I know I'm going to miss this. This worries me. This really worries me. Again, there is a time for everything. And so I know now is not the time for that. Mm-hmm. And then I need the headspace to do something else. But I know this is going to be something that I won't be having anymore and that won't be playing the role it played in my life for the past almost 8 years. And so,
it's a big change.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I do hope that I can encourage you that, kind of on that idea of like principles and, you know, the guided drift and entering spaces where you don't really have, you know, you don't know exactly what it's going to look like. I think this is who you are. You know, the desire to seek out information and perspective and like, and experience the world, not just through your experience and your five senses, but through others as well. I don't think that that's anything that you can put on pause. You know, I think that transcends. And I do hope that, you know, in those times where you're like, oh man, did I make the wrong choice? You know, whatever. Am I missing out on some really great wisdom? I do hope that you remember that this is just, you know, the show is only an expression of the creator, and that you that you remember, you know, how that this is, you know, this is your principle, right? Like this is who you are, to live in a way that is open and curious and excited about discovery.
Amen to that. No, really. This is something I know I do. I do me. That's how you say it. You do you. I do me. So it's the way I am, and so this won't change. But I won't get the exposure. Mm-hmm. I won't get the exposure to that many different mm-hmm. people. I will continue to be curious about the people mm-hmm. I meet. But I will necessarily not be meeting as many diverse people anymore. Well, I'll be meeting French people, but it's been Germans only for 20 years, so French is good. But no, I will be in the social circles I'm in, and it's going to be hard to get out of them. I'm going to meet people from different backgrounds, mm-hmm. Probably through the kids, not only technical people, and meet a lot of other parents, etc. So I'm going to get my fair share of discoveries and human relationships there. But for the more career applied mm-hmm. connections, it's going to be lacking a bit. But maybe I'm going to realize that the tech part was just a flavor, yeah. And I can get that learning from somewhere else with a different flavor, and that's going to be applicable as well. Very well.
What an adventure, right?
Yes. An adventure up to now, and then a different one starting. And that's really how we sold it to the kids, saying, hey, we're going to go on an adventure for a year, and it's going to be an adventure for each and every one of us. Your mom, who's not speaking so much French, and she speaks well, but never fluent and never been there. And the kids, who sometimes speak well and sometimes struggle. and for me, who hasn't been in France for 20-something years. And so it's an experience for everyone. An adventure for
everyone. So exciting. Well, I guess my last, you know, my last question, just burning question here is...
You didn't prepare me for
that. Is there one thing that you've always wanted to say on air, but maybe you have been like too afraid to, knowing that there was like another episode that you were going to have to say? And if so, are you ready to say it now?
Oh, boy. Something I've been afraid
to say. It also doesn't have to be afraid. I mean, something that you've wanted to say. So, yeah.
So I say, hey, you could have reached out a little bit more. Come on, people.
That is the podcaster's plight, right? Like, that's what ends all shows. Yes. I didn't even know you were listening out there.
I have the numbers, so I know you're there, but come on, would have just torn your face off to say hello.
Oh, that's no,
if you don't get the joke, it's really hard to connect with listeners.
It is.
And you get some connections once in a while, but it's not even a percent of the listeners. It's 0.0 something, and it's a lonely job. It's a really lonely job. And when I got some emails or some connections saying, hey, I listened to this episode and I got that out of it, and that was great, or I don't understand why you went this way, and some questions, that so much made my week.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
Yes. Yeah.
That's one of the hard things. So don't reach out anymore. There won't be any more episodes.
Yeah, that is a good one. I would not have thought about that, but that's really great. I mean, I completely empathize. Like, you know, people over the last like couple years have been like, oh, why'd you stop podcasting? And I was like, I didn't know you were listening.
I'm actually looking forward to that. don't listen to past me, people, for the thing I said in the last 2 minutes. I loved it when you reached out, and it was absolutely fantastic. And And if this is a closure for you as well, those 300 episodes, just reach out and tell me what you picked out of it, what you learned. That would make my days.
Weeks. What is the best way for them to do that? Because I want nobody to have any excuse to not just say even just a thank you, right? Just thank you for the show. Just, you know, let's, you know, I know I'm a guest here, but I'm just going to overstep and be like, hey, if you're listening to this, write a damn note.
Well, I don't do Twitter anymore, so don't reach out on Twitter. But the easiest way is info@devjourney.info. It's email. I guess everybody kind of does email.
Every dev has to have an email, right? Like, that's just it.
To register for something.
Use that one email we know you got and just say thanks for the show.
Exactly. info@devjourney.info. That's where I'm easiest to be found. I'm on Mastodon as well. You can find me on the socials, everything, if it's easier for you. But the info@devjourney.info.
Oh, hey, you know, I just want to say thank you for thinking of me for this last episode before your pause. It's been an honor. I do feel like we know each other so much better than the, you know, two conversations that we've had now, the three combined hours that we've spent together. I really appreciate you. I appreciate your approach. I appreciate your philosophy, like what's, you know, brought you to all of this. And it's been an honor to just, you know, hear more about what it's meant to you. It's your show. So I'll let you close it.
my cheeks are hurting and I'm not going to be able to sleep afterward. But like I said before, the way I usually close the show was to say, it was always, this has been another episode of Devpost Journey, and we'll see each other next week. We'll see each other sometime, I would say. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you, Michael. And have a good one, everyone. And we'll call it a day there.